Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Fast, the major averages snapping a three-week losing streak. Discretionary stocks, materials, and financials leading the charge higher. Is this a bounce investors can get behind? Plus, one of our traders thinks now could be the time to think about betting on Germany. That surprising take and the reason why straight ahead. And later, our chart of the week. Hard to believe this name has jumped over 11%, even as mortgage rates surged to their highest level this week since the great financial crisis. The big reveal is minutes away. I'm Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money. We're live at the Nasdaq Market Site in Times Square. On the desk tonight, Karen Feinerman, Jeff Mills, Steve Grasso, and Bono and Eisen. And we start off with a big bank breakout tonight. The financial names closing out a strong week with another gain today in this holiday shortened week, too. Take a look at the moves in some of these financials. J.P. Morgan leading the pack, up nearly 5% since last Friday. Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citigroup with a 4+% gain. The move coming as interest rates continue to ratchet higher. Yields on the two-year today hitting their highest level since November 2007. But is the rally in financials too good to be true? Karen, I know you're going to say, no, it's not too good to be true.
Too good to be true. I feel like it's still a nightmare where they were much higher earlier in the year. So obviously, I like the banks. I'm long the banks through good and bad. I've been long the banks. I think that it's a nice bounce. I wish there were one more trading day to the week and maybe it would have bounced a little bit more. But I still think the valuations are really compelling here. You know, the bear case for the money center banks is that all of their investment banking business and, capital markets business is down. The SPAC business is gone. All that is true. But remember, half their business is net interest margin. Right. So that's really doing well. We always look at the 2-year tenure. That's not actually how they make their money. It's much shorter than that. So to the extent short term rates are higher, that's great for them. The valuations, I think, are really compelling. J.P. Morgan, obviously, I love Jamie, 3.4% dividend yield, 11 times earnings, actually a little bit cheaper than that. I find that compelling. I do think there's a little loan growth there. You can make a decent bear case, but to me, it's valuation. And if I own none, I would buy it here.
We'll probably also see a boost in FIC, I would think, with the crazy moves, Jeff Mills, that we've seen in fixed income commodities and currency.
Yeah, I think you get a boost there. And if you look at a stock like Goldman Sachs, for example, I think that's an interesting one to watch. One of the only that's kind of battling with that downward sloping 200-day moving average right now. So take a look at that. Maybe that gives us a clue as to how the others might behave if they get to that point. But I've generally been surprised at the resilience in banks. I think Karen's certainly been more right than I have. But thinking about this week specifically, I don't know how much I would take from it. Better economic data, PMIs beat, better initial claims. So all good things. The market was modestly oversold as we came into the week. So banks sort of participated in that move higher. But if you think about the labor market specifically, at least in my mind, whether you want to call it overheating or just too tight, until that changes, I think the Fed's going to be pretty engaged. And an aggressive Fed keeps that risk of recession higher. And we still have an inverted yield curve. We have weakening in housing. We'll talk about that later. Lower leading economic indicators. Financial conditions generally are tightening. So I think it makes it a hard road for banks going forward. I think we have this chart. This is the last thing I'll say. But look at the complexion of market performance under the surface. So banks relative to utilities. Bank made another relative low just 2 days ago. So when thinking about that leadership complexion, it's still fairly cautious, and I don't know that that changes anytime soon.
The counter, though, to the strong jobs report, meaning the Fed is going to have to go harder, meaning we're going to go into a recession, Bonoin, is that maybe a strong labor market makes it possible that a soft landing is a possibility at this point.
It is. I mean, and I would say the last jobs report kind of gave us a glimpse into that Goldilocks scenario that you're speaking to. As for the rally, I think there are a few other things under the surface that are bubbling that perhaps we've kind of overlooked. We've talked about loan growth. I think Karen touched on that at the top of the segment. But also, like, defaults and things of that nature are all still trending towards historical lows. Now, you can say that those are lagging indicators, and they are, but so far that's the data that we have to go on. And we can talk about right narrows, you can talk about assets, you can talk about the deal calendar perhaps waning. All of those things, I think they've kind of already made loan loss provisions for. But until we really start to see defaults start to creep up, that's really going to be the telltale sign. Now, I think that is probably looming. But as for now, that has remained strong. And I think that's really why you kind of started to see a little bit of a bounce this week. With that said, I would say that the price to earnings has been compelling for quite some time on the way down as well as now on the way up. So I don't know if that is enough for me to kind of get in them or add to the positions now. But I do want to kind of keep an equal lens here, kind of noting some of the positives along with the negatives that I tend to highlight.
I mean, Steve, what do you think? Because if you are of the belief that a recession is coming, that unemployment will tick higher, that things will slow down in general, the defaults will continue to tick higher, then would you be a buyer of banks here?
No, I think that everyone made great points, and I could see both sides of it, actually. But I think the reason why we saw them bounce off the bottom recently is the market pulled them up, number one. Number two, if you look at the yield curve is still inverted, but it's a lot less inverted on a relative basis. That's number two. Number three, you have a little bit of a Goldilocks. Somebody said that, I think it might have been Bonowin, until you get CPI next week on the 13th. When the CPI comes out, and it's a great number to the downside, we're going to hear, as Scott said in his lead into to the show, we're going to hear the Fed be just as hawkish. So it's going to mean nothing. So you're going to see stocks rally for another day or two, probably close to the 200-day moving average in the S&P, which will be right around 4,200 by the time we get there. But then after that CPI, after the hawkish chatter, the markets will return to where they came from recently, lower.
Unless the CPI is hotter than you think. That was, Karen and I were just discussing that off camera, that may be the thing that the markets react to. It almost doesn't matter what the CPI is going to be unless it's hot, right, Karen?
That's right. I think that a hot CPI would really scare people. A cool CPI is like, okay, we knew that was coming. We knew a lot of things had rolled over, and we saw what happened to oil, and so we expected this. But I think that, so Steve, let me just ask you a question. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Okay. So you think in any scenario, if it's a hot CPI, people think, wow, Fed, super hawkish now. And if it's a cold CPI, then you think
still hawkish.
Is that right? So down in either case.
Yeah, I think we're going to go down. And that's why I had said that I think the next catalyst to the upside for me are the midterm elections. So I think we're going to be choppy. And I think we're going to see the markets probably go lower. But then once the midterms come into focus, I think we'll probably rip to year end.
So if that's the scenario, and I don't want to play, I mean, we are fast money, so I do want to play trader. But, you know, Jeff, if we are to believe that most scenarios out of the CPI report are negative for stocks because the Fed will still be hawkish, that would mean further inversion of the yield curve.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably true because people are still worried about slowing economic growth sometime out in the future, and that's what's been driving that inversion. And I think, you know, if you look at macro in general, right, compared to where we were at the June lows, I think generally things are worse. Rates are higher. Leading economic indicators, like I said, are lower. You've got utilities pressing higher, semis pressing lower. So that risk barometer is still very defensive. And then look abroad as well. You have Europe already testing previous lows, EM already testing previous lows. Obviously, they have all their own issues. But 40% of the S&P 500 has revenue sourced from abroad. Communication services here is testing lows. It's one of the first sectors to do that. I don't think it's going to be the last. And just watch interest rates, because it's been the market on the equity side that's been more gullible to this sort of Fed pivot narrative. And we've seen this decoupling between equities, especially looking at PE ratios, for example, and the two-year. We talked about the two-year continuing to press higher, making those new highs since 2007. Watch that decoupling. If rates continue to press higher, even if the equity markets continue to bounce, I think that that's a telltale sign that you're probably going to see multiples compress to reflect the reality of what's going on in the rates market.
All right, let's stick with financials here. The Chartmaster is here with his take on whether this week's momentum can continue. Let's get to Carter Worth of Worth Charting. Carter, what are you looking at?
Well, we're going to drill down here, just as you've been doing, on financials and banks in general. But before we get to the charts, I think it is important to make the point that While it was a good week for the sector, regional banks underperformed the S&P 500 financial sector. The NASDAQ bank index with almost 300 stocks underperformed the sector. So the sector is influenced by things like Berkshire, property casualty insurance stocks, life health, investment banks and brokers, asset managers. But look at the charts and figure it out from there. Two all data charts. This is all data going back to 1989, and it's simply two colors, two lines. The top is the S&P, the bottom orange is the financial sector. The market has almost doubled the performance of financials since the beginning of GICS data in 1989. If you look at this a different way, second chart, it's the exact same thing. It's just a relative performance line. So it's a ratio, and financials on the lows of COVID were at all-time lows, and they're basically barely off that low. Now, of course, that might be the opportunity. I don't think it is, but some people would say this is why it's so cheap or so much upside potential. Let's look at the actual index itself. This is XLF, a great ETF, very liquid, tradable. And so the sell-off of 27% brought us back to, as all will know, the highs from which we sold off. So you get down all the way down to the pre-COVID high, and we've bounced, as has the market. So the final chart and the real question is this: as we work into the apex of these converging trend lines, is this a setup for financials to break out to the upside, or basically are we sort of churning and stall before ultimately sort of slipping lower? I'm in the latter camp. I want to be underweight banks.
All right, Carter, thank you. We'll see you in a few minutes on Options Action. Carter Braxton-Worth of Worth Charting. Steve, you like your charts, so what do you think of Carter's?
So I do like the charts. I do like Carter's charts. And I think that the overarching message on a fundamental level is that when expectations for shorter rates subside or come back in, that's when you're going to get the real steepening of the yield curve. That's when you're going to see value outperform. And the key and the core of that are going to be banks. We're not there yet, so I expect this XLF to probably turn around and go lower. Shockingly, Wells Fargo, you said it before on the intro, is the outperformer as far as the monthly and the year to date. That chart looks the best to me.
Rates are like any other markets, though. They anticipate things. And if we are to believe that we understand what the Fed's path is through the end of the year, Bono, and then perhaps the shorter end of the yield curve has factored this in a bit.
I think I tend to disagree there, Mel. And shockingly enough, you tend to read my mind. But I really think that the markets have been fighting the Fed for some time now, the better part of two quarters. So I'm not really sure whether I'm looking at the futures market. Just look at the expectation for the next rate hike. It was mostly 50 basis points. Now I think it's about two-thirds to maybe 75 percentage in terms of probabilities for a 75 basis point hike now. So I really don't think the markets are pricing in Fed action properly at all. And I truly think that's the crux of the issue there. So until we get a bit more clarity there, or perhaps until markets are more willing to actually take the Fed at face value and interpret what they're saying and then have that read into markets, I think it's not going to be until that point that truly the markets are going to be reflective of truly where Fed policy is headed.
So if Bonwin is right, then to me, it's not so much about financials. It's about high flyers and big, right? Big, yeah. PE, where I think you have the most vulnerability.
Right.
More than financials, even if the economy slows down.
So, for instance, like an IGV.
Like an IGV, I'm short, but I did cover some this morning after we had our discussion about, well, you know, something like DocuSign being up.
Zscaler,
popping in Zscale. So you should come to the dark side, Melissa. And you're really good at this TV thing. Really good.
But then I can't play traded or faded, things like that. Coming up, from German stock valuations to a struggling retailer's rebound, we go inside the week's biggest market surprises and how to play them. Plus, why it may be time to send your strong dollars on a flight abroad. Details coming up in Options Action. More Fast Money is next.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back. Regular Fast Money fans know this show is full of staggering stats. Chartmaster Carter Braxtonworth hitting us with one just last night. Take a look at this. The total return on utilities since September of 1997 is equal to the total return on the S&P 500. It's rare, but that fact left us all speechless. And it got us thinking, what other nuggets of information are out there that our traders are surprised by? Jeff Mills, kick it off for us.
All right, so let me just give you a real quick bonus one because I thought this was interesting and more sort of long term, like Carter. So all of our clients anchor to the S&P 500. It's a gold standard. You can't beat the S&P 500. Compare all performance to that index. But small cap has actually outperformed the S&P 500 by 136% over the last 20 years. So just remember that that is not the entire stock market. There are areas that sometimes outperform. I think that that's worth remembering. Now, back to my actual surprise from this week. Basically, oil down, energy stocks don't care. I think we have the chart here. You can see the decoupling. You wonder if it says more about the commodity or actually the energy companies themselves. I think it probably says something about both. In terms of oil, you know, maybe the weakness is not going to be severe. There are still supply issues that might support the price. And the stocks are just better run, better capital discipline from the companies. And they're still quite profitable at these and lower levels. I think that that's important to remember. I think about a stock like EOG trading at less than 8x forward earnings. They said on their earnings call they could pay their current dividend at $44 in WTI. So these companies are just a lot different than they were a number of years ago. I think at their current valuations, they can still be very profitable, and that's probably why they're behaving the way they are relative to the commodity.
Can we go back to the small caps? Can we do more? Because I think that stat deserves it. So small caps have outperformed the S&P 500 by, what was it, 136 basis points in the past 20 years?
Over 136% cumulative performance over the last 20 years. So you look at the S&P 600 small cap versus the S&P 500, 136% cumulative return over the last two decades. So, worth thinking about that and diversifying portfolios away from just large cap sometimes.
Hard act to follow, Bonawin. What's your stat?
You can say that again. And I really shouldn't be surprised at this point. It's a meme stock. But Bed Bath & Beyond price action this week, it's up about 30%. And that is in the face of what I would call some pretty scary development. So you clearly have the Ryan Cohen situation where he's come out, he's done the reporting that he needs to do and said that he's taken all chips off the table to the tune of about $70 million. You have the unfortunate death of their CFO, and you have a stock that's just in an existential crisis and turmoil. You don't know if suppliers are willing to ship. I understand that they're shoring up liquidity, but if you were playing for the short squeeze, you got it. You got exactly what you were playing for. And to now double down, I don't know what the real catalyst is here. And anytime I see the retail investor perhaps posturing themselves to get hurt, I'm certainly going to take notice. I'm just utterly shocked at this one. I don't really understand the playbook here going forward.
Karen?
Yes. So, I often say buy when there's blood on the streets, even if it is your own. This one happens to not be my own, but it could be soon because I bought some today. Germany, the DAX. If you look at what's happened, obviously, there are so many macro headwinds. Headwinds is even way too subtle a word for what's happening in Germany and other European countries right now. However, if we look at various crises over time, we look at 2008, we look at the German Greek bank crisis, 2011. If we look at the P.E., the current P.E., which I know it will go down somewhat, but is trading well, well below the average P.E., let alone the high P.E., so that's over the last 14 years. But here's another stat that I find also interesting and important to the story. Let's go to the next one, which is the DAX versus the price to book. And this sort of takes into account all the earnings that the DAX companies have had during the last 14 years. So if you look at how low that is, the price to book, it was the average 2.76. Now I think we're at 2.78. Now we're at 1.7. That's a 40% discount to the average. Germany will find a way. I feel like this is a pandemic moment for the DAX. And so the EWG is the ETF that I used.
All right. Grasso, you're up.
Mine is geopolitical. And this to me is shocking because it's shocking and it's not shocking. The market doesn't factor something in until it knows what to factor in. But the China-Taiwan tensions, every day another headline. To me, I don't understand. We're worried about June lows. If there is some ratcheting up of hostility with China and Taiwan, we're going to drop probably to the February 2020 level of 3250 in an afternoon. It could be over the weekend. It will be a horrendous drop. And I think the market is being overly cavalier about this as if it's not going to happen. I think Russia-Ukraine is probably leading me to believe that this is more likely to happen than not. And I think the markets are ill-prepared.
The National Security Advisor this week just saying that it is a distinct threat that China invades Taiwan. So I agree. Up next on Fast Money, a winning housing stock gets crowned chart of the week. But will this trade end up being a fixer-upper as mortgage rates climb? And be sure to stay tuned to the top of the hour. Bitcoin topping a key psychological level today. CNBC tackles a jump above the 20,000 mark in tonight's 6 p.m. Eastern special Crypto Night in America. You're watching Fast Money live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. Back right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Time to reveal our chart of the week. It's Zillow, surging more than 11% since Tuesday. The stock is building back gains, even as mortgage rates hit their highest level since 2008. Zillow, though, is still down 40% this year. So as housing data turns bearish, is the stock still worth a look? Karen, you're hoping the answer is yes.
Yes, I'm hoping it's worth a look. I own it. This is one of the blood on the streets kind of one for me, actually. But, you know, we saw some of the data from some of the home builders. The earnings themselves or the outlook wasn't fantastic, but they talked about how things got a little better during the quarter, how traffic picked up. That's good for Zillow. I love the transformation of their business to asset light. I like their open door business where they can still be sort of involved with buying homes, but they don't need to put up any of the capital. So that's really good. They are the place to be. So I like this. I like the asset light, as I said, and I think we're going to see a floor here, I think, is put in. And if we get any kind of housing uptick, that's going to be really good for Zillow.
All right. It is time now for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Jeff Mills.
So NVIDIA, I don't know that you need to sell it here, but I'd be a seller in any rallies. Look to that 50-day 165. I just think the chart's broken. It's made new lows. I think more weakness ahead.
Steve Grasso.
Uranium play. It was my final trade last week on a Friday. NXE, Next Gen Energy, traded up dramatically this week.
Bono and Eisen.
XLE.
Karen Feinerman.
Yes, so related to energy, I took off a trade. So my trade is sell the OIH, buy back oil. That spread is converged.
That does it for us here on Fast Money. Don't go anywhere. Options Action is up next.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.